I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nickturn on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/be-here-now for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nickturn on May 28th.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everyone, it's Raghu, and I am here today with a new friend, but in this particular case, and it's Nikki Walton. Nikki, welcome
to Mind Road. Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So maybe I'll tell a little bit of the story. Nikki got in touch, and after looking at some stuff on Love Serve Remember around Ram Dass and so on, could have been retreats. And then she said, gee, I what can I do to contribute? I'd like to contribute. And I said, okay, let's talk. And we did talk. And I would say we hit it off, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That was a magical conversation, very refreshing. And the end result was more than what I was expecting when I reached out.
And the end result, everybody, is that Nikki is joining Be Here Now Network.
Yes.
With her own show.
So
we got into a nice comfy vibe. And but Nikki, just say a little, this is something I do talk to everybody. Whenever I talk to somebody, I find out what it is that turned them on in their lives to the idea, ooh, there is a path to happiness,
yes,
or reality, yes, or truth, whatever, you know, I call it that thing there.
Yeah,
you know, ineffable thing. There is
exactly
a path to it, right?
Exactly, exactly. For me, I was young. I was like, my earliest memories were being afraid of dying or being afraid of losing my closest family members, to the point to where I would be taken to the priest. I was raised Catholic, and my mom was like, I don't know what's going on. She needs answers. I don't have them. And of course, the priest didn't have many answers for me either. So by like the age of 10, I was already in the New Age aisle, like at the library and the bookstore, trying to figure out like, who am I? why am I here? Will I like rot in the ground? Like that doesn't, it didn't feel right. It didn't set well with me.
How old were you?
I also remember like.
Nikki, how old were you?
I was at that time somewhere between 7 and 10.
Oh.
And I mean, every night just sitting up wide awake, terrified, just scared, a fear that I couldn't really put my finger on. And that fear comes up sometimes now. That's, it's noticed. And then the mind tries to point and say, well, that's why you're afraid, or you have this big project coming up. But it's that same fear that was experienced at that young age. So I was going to say, at about that same time, I would look in the mirror and I just knew, like intuitively, I'm like, I would move my head real slow. And I'm like, I don't think I'm in there. Like, that's how I felt without having really read anything.
Really?
And then, of course, I got lost in the world of trying to fit in. And I was naturally very shy and very socially awkward. I didn't have many friends, super, you know, book smart. So I was always like in class and doing well. That was like my identity, as like a smart, quiet kid. And then when I got to college, I started exploring Buddhism, and I read a lot of texts, but I was good. I was like, this is great, until I got to that part that said, give up all of your worldly desires. And I'm like, wait, hold on. I'm not ready for that yet. So then went back off, got lost in the world again, until about 27, I launched a natural hair website. I had already received my master's in counseling, so I was practicing psychotherapy. I was married, already had one child, and the success came very quickly. And I used to very much attribute it to my new spiritual reading, which was The Secret. So it was kind of like the gateway drug into a deeper spirituality for me. So Law of Attraction, I'd been doing like affirmations, you know, mantra, and that seemed at the time to be what led to that success in the world. And it was not even a year into said success, with like New York Times profiles and four profiles and on Dr. Oz and Steve Harvey, you know, big things to come from such a little project that I started in my bedroom. I wasn't happy. I wasn't fulfilled. I was not content. I was the opposite of content. I had that same energy that I had when I was younger, and it would come up strong. And I remember for my book I did with HarperCollins, it hit every list but the New York Times. Every list, all the major lists, and I really wanted the New York Times. And I remember being devastated, and I called my friend, Tracy Ellis Ross, and I'm like, you know, I don't know what's wrong with me. I've been upset for a week. I've never been this down, especially over something that I know is so minor. It's so surface. It's so, this is BS. Like, what's wrong? And she reminded me that I don't do the work that I do for accolades. We do it to help. And if I was doing it for those reasons, that's a part of the problem. She also told me, go deeper. Whatever you're reading now, go deeper. And so I started looking up Law of Detachment instead of attraction. And because I could tell I was super attached to the outcomes of my actions and the results that I wanted to see from them. So I started down that path, which led me to Ram Dass. Like, one of the first books that I purchased after my foray with Law of Attraction was Be Here Now and Polishing the Mirror and Be Love Now. And then, of course, you know, like Eckhart Tolle and, you know, teachers like that. And it was almost just like, because I have a very busy and active mind, I need to triangulate things. So I read, you know, the beautiful works of Ram Dass, but then I'd read Eckhart, and then I'd read, you know, other teachers. And I'm just like, oh, well, they call the I Am presence, and it's, you know, called this in this other teaching. But I started feeling it more fully, having that experience myself. And that is what changed everything. And so after reading a million books and meditating every day for hours every day, meditating, looking, seeking, it was finally seen. I'm like, oh, I'm watching the meditator. I'm watching the act of meditation. So that shift from being Nikki sitting, trying to, you know, silence the mind, and all of a sudden it was seen, no matter what Nikki does or doesn't do, what her mind is doing or not doing, what that body is doing or not doing, even if that body is like just balled up crying like in the corner, that love is there. that peace is there. It's completely accessible at all times, and it's more real than the body and the mind. And so I've been living in that space as that love for a couple of years. And I still like to read, and I probably read a little bit every day, but it's not the same kind of seeking energy. It's more like, how do they try to express this no thing? And I like to just look at, you know, new ways of talking about it.
Hmm. Fabulous story that is. No, that's incredible. Oh boy. Well, you got there in like 3 seconds, and I've been doing this for decades. I'm still trying to get there, Nikki.
Man, this was intense. My ex, he would say, "What are you looking for? What are you seeking?" Because he could see it, you know, and it was all consuming. And I think that everything that I had read was correct, that suffering is necessary. At least it was in this experience. I needed to be back up against the wall to be all in, to really force me into, like, when everything is falling down, all you want to do is sit at love's feet, at God's feet. Because, you know, as soon as you get up, you're going to suffer. It's going to hurt. So it's like I clung to that presence in those times, like between 2017 and really like the top of 2018. And that's when it became apparent that it wasn't Nikki doing it, that it's a play of Nikki coming back to this. But this has never been lost, and it's always here, and it's effortless, and it's formless, and it feels like love. And it sounds like silence.
That's nice. But, you know, as you're saying some of this stuff, I start just thinking about my own journey. Mm-hmm. And what is central to that presence in my particular instance. I mean, some of what you're talking about, of course, Ram Dass calls the witness.
Yes.
And it's, you know, a mindfulness thing. And unfortunately, if it comes from your mind, it's a kind of nasty little guy that's judging everything. If it comes from the center of your spiritual heart, the loving awareness place that Ram Dass calls it, it's not anything but unconditional. So. It's a world of difference. We were talking before about, well, we both have an affection for Rumi.
Absolutely.
So I started thinking of, you know, different, I have this book that, written by Andrew Harvey, mm-hmm. called The Way of Passion, A Celebration of Rumi. And it has, if you start to go through it, it has things in it that are so relevant to now. Well, Of course. Anyhow, let's talk about a couple of these things because they're. Oh wait, before we do that, what's the name of the show the podcast?
Oh yes, it's called New Growth. New Growth, and the name actually came from my sister. New, as in brand new.
New
and growth, as in growth, like spiritual growth. But in this case, it has a double meaning because my background is in natural hair. And so Black women refer to their new growth, the new hair that's growing uh-huh. from their scalp as new growth. So cool. It's like a nod to a former self. And new growth obviously is what we're all doing, growing in this space, beyond, transcending beyond form.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I mean, not to make this a big promo or anything, but I do know because Nikki's shared with me some of the people that she's going to be talking to that are just, you know, people who are in normal walk of life. I mean, in this case, a couple of them are in the entertainment or writers or entertainers or songwriters. They're in the kind of entertainment business, but they all are very much doing what Nikki is doing, what I am doing, what I'm assuming most of us listening are doing, which is putting one foot in front of the other on this path. And moving forward into new growth.
Absolutely. Yes. Moment to moment choosing. And these are headlining guests But like you said, they're all on their inner journey as well. So it's going to be beautiful speaking with them about this formless space where their creativity, you know, blooms from, and kind of we can use that too for inspiration as well.
Yeah. Here's what Rumi says. Well, actually, this is with Andrew's. He has some good summations of this. Really good. He says in every poem, every story, every line of every poem, Rumi is saying to us tenderly or majestically, quietly or railingly or wittily, never, ever recover or even want to from the wound of divine love, divine longing. So you will come to long with your whole being to participate now in the vast transformation that destiny is demanding of the human race. That sounds like about now.
Yes.
Rumi is a madman, and he's trying to do nothing less than send the human race mad with love.
Yes, that's beautiful and true.
So, but in the tradition that I come from being, of course, with Ram Dass and Neem Karoli Baba, Maharaji, we call him, it is central to it, of course, is devotional yoga. It's called bhakti yoga.
Mm-hmm.
But not, it's a devotion that, it's kind of very much like what we have been doing with Ram Dass until he left, and we continue to do at retreats and so on. In fact, pretty much everything we do, which has, we always have some great Buddhists around. We can't go anywhere without them, you see. They shine a light that is so extraordinarily helpful.
Yes.
That it's so we know that Maharaji set this all up. You know, we were all going to, you know, insight meditation courses in India, most of us. And he didn't tell us to go. It just sort of happened. And he'd say, oh, you go into the, in English, you go, course? Course done? So, it was like that. It wasn't anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, it's formulated a major part of the kind of grounding that we got.
Yes.
That allowed us to be able to go into bhakti open-heartedness in a way that had spiritual discrimination, shall we say.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that's what they really provide. It's the heart wisdom, so that wisdom part is really, without it, it's hard to get through the mind stuff.
Absolutely.
It's really difficult without using that, but it's a very, very, you know, the ego can be a great servant, but a shitty master.
Yes, yes,
so,
yes.
So there's that to it. So, yeah, so that, oh, so we, the longing thing. So, you know, we were around this thing that was like the, you know, there's no term I could put to what that thing in that blanket was, but it was like the best ice cream you could ever have in your life.
Yes. Okay,
it's as warm as water that you can just let go into it. It was like a that. It wasn't, had it nothing to do with, the personality was fun, he was having fun with us and everything, but it was just the being in it, in that divine presence. So once that happens, you're like, okay, when you're not there, you're going, shit, I gotta be there,
right?
Because those of us that went over there, we were pretty one-pointed.
Mm-hmm.
And you sound very one-pointed yourself.
Yes, yes.
And so there was that deep, deep longing to be in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And he, of course, it was easy to be with this being that's in that space. Right?
Exactly.
It's a lot easier, let me tell you. But It, in a way, it matters not, because that space has nothing to do with physicality. So, so when I read this and I read this divine longing bit, divine presence, divine longing, it's the realest thing that I ever experienced.
Absolutely, same here, and it's very palpable,
mm.
And it is now seen as grace, right, as a gift. There were times in that movement that I wished, I'm like, can I just go back? Like looking around at people around me, like, can I just be like them? Like, you know, blissfully unaware of this, because it was very powerful, very strong. I stopped watching TV, like every activity that I was engaged in. Like I used to love to watch cartoons and, you know, just do little things that were mindless. And now, I mean, they were all replaced. All of them were replaced with that one pointedness, like finding, seeking. If I wasn't meditating, I was reading. If I wasn't reading, I was on Audible. I was listening. If I was fatigued, I would get fatigued from reading. But I would listen. I'd go to YouTube. You know, it was always something related to this.
How'd you do this? You were working and taking care of children and marriage and oh my God.
No, it was grace again, because there was between 2016 and 2018, I was blessed to have a project that was paying me really good money without me having to actively be engaged all the time. And so there were moments when I would feel like you aren't doing shit. Like you need to get up and contribute to society. And then when I'd step into that love, I would recognize I am in this moment, the best thing I can do. I forget which teacher it is that even said that, maybe Ramana Maharshi, that the greatest gift that I can provide right now is my own awakening. And I could sense that too. Like I can't even speak about this or help until there's an anchor of it here. And so I would remember that, and then I wouldn't feel like a lazy bum, because I had days like my daughter would be at school and I would just be able to sit at home. And I had a beautiful rooftop in Washington, D.C., where I could see the Washington Monument, and it was expansive. It was gorgeous. I'd sit up there every day and read, listen, meditate. I was blessed to be able to have the time.
That's amazing. So there's keeping on the longing track. The author here talks about how poetry like Rumi's, it demands a real one-pointed listening, right? Mm-hmm. This is not something, oh yeah, I've got whoever on in the background.
Yeah. No, you have to be
young G's. Young Jeezy.
Yeah, exactly.
He can be in the background. It's okay. No,
right,
no problem.
Right. You can put music on in the back. You cannot put Rumi on in the back.
Yeah. But also, he says, you cannot put, and he gives an example, Maria Callas, the great opera singer.
Ah.
You can't do that. It demands, Rumi is absolutely awake, and awakening has a very fierce edge, the edge of the sword of discrimination. Did I just say that? The sword of ecstasy. It has a fire in it. And you have to consent when you listen to and read Rumi to be sliced by that sword and invaded by that fire. Oh, my God. And he says, Callas's voice is demanding that you listen, because the truths that she is burning her voice away to tell are truths that can save an entire civilization.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Absolutely.
What Callas is doing when she sings is pleading for love against patriarchal madness. Mm. That voice is always there, burning away, begging love to win in a world which has been ruined by a crazy masculine hardness and deadness of heart. What, this book was, by the way, he wrote this in 1993, okay?
Wow. Literally.
Today.
Yeah.
Is that nuts? Yeah. Talk about that in your own experience, the horror of the patriarchal over boss.
You know, for me, in the last, I love the part, the imagery about the burning away, and that is what I was going through in the most tumultuous times. Like when I talk about like that 2017 to 2019, 2018 period, everything that was not love got burnt up. So, and I knew in the back of my mind during that inner suffering and seeing the outer suffering too, that the only thing that would be left was love. So there was fear there. But I just kept placing my attention on the love. So no matter if it was a person that I was facing up against, and I had terrible business partners. They were male. And dealing with that, in addition to what seemed like the anxiety it was causing here, you know, and then remembering that this is more important than what was happening out here, like what this is here. So healing this and recognizing that if I could find and recognize the light in every moment, that only the things that were not built in love would be what was burned away. And that has been the experience.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yes, walking around with that perspective is the entire difference in our lives. But it may not always be pleasant. And I know you're not sort of relating the unpleasant. I hear the cut through, but I didn't hear the cutting, if you know what I mean.
It is very unpleasant. I can remember being in the midst of an argument, whether it was with, a business partner or with my own partner, and recognizing the need to step away. So when I would feel that energy rush up, we all know that energy. I don't know how it manifests there for you, but for me, it starts like in my abdomen and it comes up and there's heat and there's, it's very, very uncomfortable. And it comes up too, like before a big speaking engagement. It's the same energy, I just label it differently, right? So that energy would come up and I used to do whatever I could to avoid it, whether it was reach for a glass of wine, scroll through my phone, you know, get on the phone, complain about said person or situation. Instead, I could be in the middle of a debate or argument and I would excuse myself, go to the restroom. And I tell the people that I work with all the time to do this too, if you can. And I would sit on the bathroom floor and just allow that energy to be there without labeling it and without needing it to go away. Just being aware of it. And at the same time, if possible, being aware of love that's also there, but it's more fine. It's very subtle, you know, but beautiful. So noticing that love was still there, even when that energy was raging. And that is what got me through, because that energy would come up even after those situations that seemed to resolve or fall away. I started noticing that energy like uncaused at about the same time every day. I'd feel it and I'm like, oh, you're back, like a visitor. Hello, welcome back. And then I'd reach for that love. And then I didn't have to go and remove myself and sit anywhere, you know, to find the love that was also present while that energy was raging.
How are you entering in when you say reach for love? What are you actually saying? Like,
it's
okay,
almost
so you
like
notice,
yeah.
You notice bullshit is going on, you're caught in whatever.
Exactly.
Whatever of the defilements, right? Anger, yes. In this case. And then what?
I have to be aware enough to notice that the anger is there and that it is not me, that it is a visitor. That's step one. Ah, anger's here in the midst of the whatever's going on out here. That's very important, because if you can't do that, you can't do the next step, which for me, I've tried to talk about it. And I believe it's like a listening. I almost listen. Like I almost even turn my head a little bit. I listen to the silence that is present. Even if I was at a rock concert, I'd be able to hear this loud silence that rock music is arising and falling back into. So it's almost like I turn and I listen to the silence and a love like rolls in like a fog or joy bubbles up. It just feels like I become aware, like that presence announces itself. And so then I'm aware of that and still some of the energy here. And of course, the situation that the human eyes can see. But as I've done this over the years, it's a like initial reaction. It's as soon as there is any energy here, I turn and I hear love, right? So I listen for the frequency of love and then I stay in that. And now that love hasn't grown, but my awareness of it has, I guess. So it's full and it's way more real than the fear that's manifesting or the people out here. Even Nikki, this love announces itself so loudly that it's seen as the only power, even when there's seeming worldly powers unfolding in front of me. And so it's like a felt faith. It's a God experience. And I remember in like 2018, I wrote in my journal, am I deluding myself? Like, is this real? Because it's very, very real, very palpable in my experience. And it's grown over time. I became aware of it in 2015. And I knew that it was something because finally my worst nightmare happened. The one that I had been dreading all of my childhood, my grandmother passed. Mm-hmm. And she waited for me to come to St. Louis, I believe, and we had our moment. She died with me in the room, just the two of us. And I was, I don't know how old at the time, I guess, like, I don't know, like early 30s. And I stood over her as she took her final breaths. And there was grief here, of course, but there was peace. Like a peace was present. And at the time, it was still perceived as like maybe here and maybe a little bit behind. But I knew in that moment, if I can have peace now in this worst moment where I've lost my best friend seemingly, if there's love here now, there's nothing that can come out here that can shake me, that can make me like seem to have this love eclipsed. And so I started practicing it more and more after 2015. And like I said, now it's not that the love is here or that the love is here or that I'm back here and Nikki's here, because that's how it felt for a little bit. This was seen as not being here either. It's just love. I see my face and I see your face and I see the equipment in here, but I feel love and it's more real than everything. And it doesn't have an object and it doesn't have a form. And it, but it feels beautiful and it's aware of itself and there's an awareness of it.
Wow. You know who you sound like?
Mm-mm.
Ram Dass.
Really?
Yeah, Ram Dass used to sit around and just do, everything is love. Everything.
Yeah.
And it would be, so there was a, this is a cute story. So there was a bunch of people around and, you know, and Ram Dass said, there isn't anything that I don't love. I love my wheelchair. I love the view from the window. I love the dog. I love whatever. You know, he went on and on about everything. And then he said, and I, you see that rug? Everybody looked. It's just, he says, it's a dirty rug. Something happened. I love that rug. So somebody said, Ram Dass, you're comparing, like you love me? You're comparing
in the rug. To a in the dirty rug.
And Ram Dass loved that. He laughed. Yes, yes. So the guy, he caught a piece of a dirty rug and he framed it and sent it to Ram Dass and put it up on his wall. It's in his house still.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And it was actually his quotes that helped me in the beginning for that early practice of to treat everyone you meet like God in drag. And so I would remember that and I'd walk down the street and every person, every animal, everyone, I'm like, that's another face of God. That's God in a costume. That's a costume. But then, like what I believe you're saying too right now, it's seen that it's not even that God or Christ is here where I see your form. It's that your form isn't there really, truly, because our forms are all passing. So the more real presence is that love. And so it's not that God is shining out through everyone's eyes. That's one beautiful way to look at everything. And that still happens here to see that way. But it feels more real to know that there's only this love. It's like you see the world, but you feel the kingdom. That's how I experience it. And I used to say my mantra was not good humanhood or bad humanhood, Christhood. I would do that like at the airport because I get very, very annoyed at airports. I don't like to wait and I don't like when people push and stuff. And so when I started practicing that and remembering that little mantra, it would like just wipe out humanhood. And I'm like, if there's not good or bad humanhood to judge, there's only Christhood, only this love here. There's no reason to think. Because what is there to think about? If there's only Christ, so there's nothing to think about. You just love about. And then, yeah, there's just joy.
The only problem is the forgetting that.
Yes.
Seem to forget that quite a bit, in fact.
Often.
Very, very much.
It gets easier. And I always tell people to, I would set an alarm on my phone to go off every minute. For 2 hours, like between 2015 and 2018, I had an alarm dinging. My kids would be like, what is that sound? You know, just to kind of remember every minute to shift, to be, to love, you know, to be
you did
the
that.
Presence. That's, yeah, not the person. Yeah.
Yeah. So Rumi, back to Rumi, he says, in terms of, well, here's, and which again, I guess I'm sort of delineating the path that I've been on for all these years. But that has been my focus, which is hanging out with these kinds of beings as a real practice, remembering and remembering and a kind of training that has no training, that just instills this thing, that thing there that I like to call it, my Quebecois thing.
Yeah.
He says, you have to cling to those who know, because only that clinging to the feet of the enlightened ones can give you the slightest chance of ending the tyranny of the ego. Mm-hmm. Because you'll see holiness again and again being enacted in front of you. See, so those of us that were with this particular being named Karoli Baba, who said, by the way, there's no, a guru has nothing to do with, it's not about the physical. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. So we all say, you know, because people go, well, you're so, what grace you were looking. And we all go, we are the dumbest part of humanity that he let come near him. Okay, that we needed that extra, you know, here you are, your love, just glowing love. Nikki is glowing love.
Okay? Thank you.
It's obviously, as so many people have proven, it is not necessary to be with somebody with a physical body. It is necessary, though, to have a guru. It is, and I'm not saying that. I just said that totally didactically. Shut up. I believe, and I'll say, so Ram Dass, too, used to talk about it. Everybody does have a guide from deepest part of themselves. There is a something that you could actually name it, a Buddha, a Christ, a Neem Karoli Baba, whatever. The relationship with that entity, however it comes in one's life, it's really important in its ability to really help with the consistent remembering that's necessary to remain in, as you were saying before, I'm more into the presence of that love than I am of whatever the negative situation might be. Awesome. That negative is there. Grief, it could be if someone who died, and grief is there, but there's also the acknowledgement of that other place, whatever you, there's so many different names of that other place.
The I am, you know, the presence, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, whatever. So it's a matter of being on like two planes.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yeah, have a foot in the world and out of the world. Yeah. And but I always, go ahead.
No, just that meaning also that it's not that you're pushing the grief away by going, oh, I'm love is here and I can be in touch with this soul, my grandmother in your case. It's not a problem. You know, spiritual bypass is a real thing. You know, I know it's a byword today, but you know, it is something we all need to, you know, have. That's why I love the Buddhists. They are uncompromising. It's good. There's going to be discriminating wisdom in all of this, but you can be with that emotion, and at the same time, you are with the love. It's
absolutely.
You can be doing living on those two planes at the same time. So
when you're with the love, you're accepting. You can't even, I guess for me, it is the surrender. When you reach for that love in the midst of the emotional storm, that is letting go. When I let go, love is there. When I'm resisting it, it'd be difficult to find that love, to feel that love. But when I let go and allow that grief, or allow that anger and not judge it, all of a sudden, oh, there's the love. Is love here? Heck yeah, it's right here. It's always been here. So it is a surrendering to it. It is a being with it. It's an accepting.
Yeah. You want to hear a surrender story? I'll tell you a surrender story.
Yeah.
Jesus. Okay. This is Tibetan Buddhist. So Milarepa. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that name?
No.
Great, one of the greatest saints of Tibetan Buddhism when India, when, well, I can't go into the history of how in northern India there was this great, you know, tradition that went of thinking developed in colleges, like one was called Nalanda, and then it went into Tibet and mixed with the bone tradition and so on. See, even that, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but
you
I do know.
Like you do. You
yeah,
sound like you
I
do.
Know.
You sound
I
like
know.
An expert.
It's awful. It's just awful. But I trust.
That's your superpower.
I trust Robert Thurman. So he'll straighten me out because we're going to do a retreat with him soon. Okay. Yeah. So a great, great yogi, the greatest Tibetan yogi. Okay. So, and this is around the power of silence and also involves the surrender, what surrender really is. So he was in his cave in the Himalaya, and he just had his cotton robe. That's it, you know. And one day a robber came, right? And he took everything that he had, his pot, his food, and maybe even an old battered Buddha statue or two, right, that was in the cave. And the robber, feeling happy, he was very happy with his morning's haul. He started to walk down the mountain. After about a quarter of an hour, he heard something behind him. And turning to see a most astonishing sight, the bony hermit running naked, smiling, down the mountain, holding out his robe. The robber looked at Milarepa's eyes, saw that there was nothing he could do that could in any way alter this unconditional love and forgiveness that Milarepa had for him, wow. Fell at his feet, and became one of his greatest disciples.
I love that.
What had been communicated to the robber's heart was some taste of that great love that rises out of silence, that infinite and universal love that rises out of the silence of the void.
Wow.
That great silent love in which Milarepa's mind was forever at peace. Okay, is that great or what?
That is amazing. I don't know. I would not be able to run with my last item like that. I don't think I'm there.
No.
What a beautiful story. And I love that. The love rising out of the void. That's how it feels here. That's exactly how I would try to express it.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing, the understanding of beings like this is not really possible. But what's so great, the courage to, I mean, he sat up in that, you know, in that cave, and what he did, it's part of this thing. Rumi's calling us to immense bravery. I love this. The only bravery that matters now is not something that only mystics need. It is the essential form of spiritual action now. Courage like Gandhi, Martin Luther King, courage that like this fuels steadily the inexhaustible passion of the Dalai Lama for peace. Unless we have this courage, unless we have this love, we are not going to be able to awaken the cynical and lost who are destroying the planet or allowing it to be destroyed. They'll just look to us and say, you can be bought. You can be dismayed. You can be scared. We are not going to be bought, dismayed, or scared. We will be standing in the center of divine love, radiating divine love, and we're not going to care even if we are killed, because we know death is only a moment that passes. It is going to require a passion for spiritual action of which the world has no knowledge yet if the world is going to be saved. We will need what Rumi has shown us. We will need to really root ourselves in divine passion and divine courage and in adoration. Otherwise, our entire being will tremble in the whirlwinds and tempests that are about to come. This is nuts. You know what? I didn't read that whole thing, okay, until just now. I saw, you know, because of the way I see things, I go, oh, that'd be a good thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. I mean, is this all it's about now? Yeah. Yeah, so that's Andrew, everybody, that's Andrew Harvey, The Way of Passion, A Celebration of Rumi.
I'm gonna download that as soon as we get off. That's
absolutely
powerful.
Absolutely, isn't it? Jesus, God.
Courage. I like that word too.
Courage is a big thing. And I didn't tell you the Krishnadas's courage story.
No.
Okay, so should I tell again, everybody out there?
I want to hear it. Yeah, let's hear it. Let's do it.
It's good to hear these things over and over. Krishnadas tells the same stories every kirtan he does, okay? It's not to drive me. He said, drives you out of your mind? What about me? I got to listen every night. And he was in Mumbai, and he found Neem Karoli Baba and he's staying in a hotel, and Maharaji Neem Karoli Baba used to come to the hotel with his Indian devotee and just hang in the room, and, you know, it'd be a couple of people. Really, literally, probably only him and somebody else, I think. I can't even imagine that kind of grace. Anyhow, so at one point, Maharaji looks at him and he points his finger and he goes, courage is a very important thing. Maybe not important. I can't remember what exact word. And the Indian devotee next to him said, this is Maharaji. This is Guru Kripa. The grace of the Guru is this path. This has nothing to do with doing anything or having anything or, you know. And Maharaji turned back to Krishnadas and went, courage is very important. And Krishnadas has had that his whole life, so that whenever, you know, we're talking about the remembering, and when I asked you, how are you remembering? And you're just turning into the silence, you know, which is beautiful. That's his thing, right? He just, that whole thing just gets prompted and he becomes present to a lot. Same thing, just different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so courage is, you know.
Wow. I don't know why that word stuck out from what you read, but that's the power. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, pleasure. God, there's so much in this book. I can't even tell you.
When you were speaking earlier about sitting at the feet of the guru or just remembering, whenever I'm working with like my coaching clients, I tell them if they need to personify that love, they should. You know, in the beginning, like I said, in 2015, when I first started practicing the presence of love of God, my grandma, right when she passed, I personified it, knowing that I was consciously personifying something that is not a person. But I said, if my grandma was here, she would have she'd have my hand and she wouldn't let it go. And I wouldn't let her hand go. So I used that, like I wouldn't let her hand go, holding on to that presence nonstop. And I find that that helps a lot of people to be able to feel that presence as their dad or their passed on grandma, and to just stay with it, like nothing else matters. Because it doesn't.
Wow. Do you know who Nisar Gardatta is?
Have you heard that name?
Yeah.
Maharaj?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got several books back here. His final talks too, which threw me. I'm still trying to get there with those final talks.
Yeah, it can be pretty heady stuff.
Yeah.
But occasionally shit's just like shines through. That's so present. I mean, you know, obviously, it's not particularly my path. You know, Gyan Yoga, which it is, non-duality, and all that. It's not even. He's more than that, actually. He's more than that. But he says, we're into this, man.
What time? How long has it been?
It's been an hour.
No way.
Isn't that something?
When you're having fun.
Yeah, right. So here's something from him that I thought it's a good closer to. Mm-hmm. He's describing what it means to live in absolute consciousness. Okay. He says, I'm now 74 years old, and yet I feel that I am an infant. I feel clearly that in spite of all the changes, I'm a child. My guru tells me that the child which is you, even now, is your real self. Go back to that state of pure being where the quote-unquote I am is still in its purity before it was contaminated with this quote-unquote this I am or that I am. Your burden is of false self-identifications. Abandon them all. My guru told me, trust me. I tell you, you are divine. Take it as the absolute truth. Your joy is divine. Your suffering is divine too. All comes from God. Remember it always. You are God. Your will alone is done. I did believe him and soon realized how wonderfully true and accurate were his words. I did not condition my mind by thinking, I am God, I am wonderful, I am beyond. I simply followed his instruction, which was to focus the mind on pure being. I am, and God is one, and to stay in it, I used to sit for hours with nothing but the I am in my mind. Mm. Soon, peace and joy and a deep, all-embracing love became my normal state.
That is one of my absolute favorite quotes of his. I've reread that one. As soon as you started speaking, I'm like, of course.
Only peace remained in unfathomable silence. Wow.
Powerful and true. Yeah, I absolutely love his pointings. Very clear. And that was one of the earliest teachers that I turned to as well. Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ram Dass. That was, if I would have just stayed there and not went, you know, out into all the little branches, I probably would have rested in this much earlier. But my mind needed to go down every path first.
Yeah, it's all cool.
That's so pure. I mean, that's it. That's all you need. Like, if you can listen to what's in that quote and actually begin to practice, that's all you need.
And we end this with saying none of this happens without practice. I mean, except if you're Ramana Maharshi, maybe. I don't know. No, I mean, to say that, even say it that way, is ridiculous, of course. Mm. The reality is that, let's just say, spending time with the presence really affords us to be able to shift over to this new perspective and have that be more of the perspective on a moment-to-moment basis. So it does take doing some practice, taking initiative, and making an offering. You know, it doesn't mean running down the hill with your rowboat necessarily,
right?
Going to the robber, take it, man, take it all. But it's you know, it's, and why not hang out with that? Hang out with Milarepa, right?
Absolutely.
Let's just hang out with Milarepa. Oh, so great. Thanks for being here, Nikki.
And thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Yeah, no, it's been really great. And everybody, Nikki's show will be podcast, rather. You will probably be able to access it around now once you listen to this podcast, because that's the way we've arranged it.
Yes.
You know,
clever.
So and that'll be on, so what is again, podcast name?
New Growth.
New Growth.
It's all about divine love, or as Ram Dass calls it, loving awareness. That's the whole point, and talking to these headlining guests about tapping into this divine love and how they create from that space.
Beautiful. All right, so you'll just go to BeHereNowNetwork.com and you'll find Nikki there, and then go to iTunes and subscribe. That's important. That helps. That'll help Nikki in the show, and you know, tell your friends and get up on social media and share, because it'll all be up there. That'll be great, because it's going to be fun. Thanks again, Nikki. Everybody, we'll see you next time on Mind Rolling.